So welcome to another episode of Uplifting Conversations. Today's conversation is a very special conversation with my partners, my friends, my colleagues, our CIO, Linda Asante, and Linda McGarrah-Horner, who leads impact and corporate strategy for us, and a number of other things. It is not only Women's History Month, it's our first episode of season three of Uplifting Conversations. And it's the first episode that we've had, I think, with our leadership team here together. This is your big debut, ladies. I hope you're feeling as excited as I am about this. I promise it will be pretty painless, but I'm excited for folks to get to know the Lindas. I have talked often now at this point about the Linda Standard. I feel like these two women have been nothing but uplifting ever since each of them has come into my life, and I'm sure everyone will be as excited and enthusiastic about your stories and your backgrounds and your ethos as I am. So excited to introduce you guys.
Thank you, Tazat.
Thank you. Well, the first thing we need to know about these Lindas is that you make us stretch well beyond our comfort zone on a daily basis, not the least of which is doing this podcast. So that's the first thing they need to know about the two Lindas, that this is, you know, this is new territory for us, but we're delighted to join you today.
I so appreciate you guys humoring me, and you'll be glad on the other side of this. I promise. It gets easier. And so, Linda A, since you decided to speak up first and complain about being on the podcast, I would love to. So anyway, in terms of this conversation in general, I would love for the listeners to come out of this conversation knowing why I feel so strongly about you two individually and us as a team, and kind of get to sense some of the magic that we have internally through the medium of the podcast. And I would love if you guys would share a little bit more generously than I'm sure you're comfortable with, just about who you are and what's brought you to this work. And I think folks will be delighted to get to know you a little bit better. And so, like, in that vein, Linda Asante, and we'll have to keep our Linda straight. I'll call you guys by first and last name as we do, or maybe initials. But Linda, can you just talk a little bit about kind of what's brought you here to this seat that you're in today? And you know, working in private market impact here at Uplifting Capital, and just in general, kind of what's brought you up to this point?
Sure, happy to. Well, thank you. It is, kidding aside, delighted to join you today, and delighted to have a chance for Linda and I to tell a little bit about our stories, particularly in a month celebrating women. So thank you for having us today, kicking off season three. So my background is 35 plus years in finance, investment banking, consulting, and investment management. And most recently, I spent about 13 years at a firm called Jasper Ridge Partners. We managed about $32 billion in discretionary assets under management on behalf of a handful of ultra high net worth families and some institutions. For the institutions, we invested private equity only. For the families, we invested across their balance sheet. And so we invested in public and private assets. It tended to be long-term multi-generational capital, and as such, could take afford to be illiquid. So we had a lot of private market investments in those portfolios and a relatively high equity betas. And then for those families, we also worked with them on their tax and estate planning and their philanthropic endeavors. And so I was a managing partner there. And as I said, I was there for about 13 years. And in late 2019, I found myself in a position of feeling like I had the best day job I could ever imagine, but still feeling like something was missing. And I felt like I was in search of a greater sense of purpose. And so as I was reflecting on it, I was thinking back, you know, I know later we're going to talk a little bit about some people that have influenced us along our journeys. But I think it's important to note, like, part of my reflection back in 2019 was something my dad said. My mom died when I was young, and so I was raised, my sister and I were raised largely by my father. And he instilled in us a belief that in the end, we'll be judged not by what we take from this life, but by what we have given. And I was really reflecting on that for a whole series of reasons at that point in my life in 2019. And I was really fortunate, frankly, to have a bunch of supportive partners at Jasper Ridge and my family to be able to step back and reflect and ultimately make the decision to retire from my role as a managing partner at Jasper Ridge to pursue purpose with intentionality. And so there were a handful of different threads that I had been pulling on in my day job that I thought were areas that I'd want to explore either on the for-profit or the not-for-profit side. The first of those was doing some work in creating pathways for young, diverse talent. I had been involved in that in the real estate industry specifically, and then more broadly in financial services through some foundation work that I had done. Affordable housing, again, that was an area of interest and import, particularly looking at the crisis unfolding in many places in the United States, but certainly in our own backyard in California. And the third area was the energy transition. And just seeing what that was looking and what that landscape looked like as we transition from, you know, traditional hydrocarbons to a more sustainable, resilient future with alternative fuel sources. And so as I was reflecting on that, taking this opportunity to be more intentional with my own purpose, I realized that there was this interesting opportunity potentially to capitalize on what seemed to me like some supply-demand imbalances, increasingly interesting and friendly regulatory environments. And frankly, a recognition that huge swaths of our population have just been overlooked and under-resourced. And that magnitude of that opportunity was underappreciated. So all of these things were coming together. It just so happened when I actually took the final decision to retire from Jasper Ridge, it coincided with the onset of the pandemic. And so, as with everybody else, everybody's life was sort of up in the air and sorting out what we were going to do next. And I had an opportunity to be introduced to someone who's a close common friend of ours both, Toussaint, Jordan Moss, who is doing some really innovative things with essential housing and affordable housing here in California. And it was really through Jordan, I started to better understand and kind of give some granularity to what it is I could do in this next phase of my life in terms of having impact, bringing some of the skill sets from my past 35 years in finance and investing and apply it in a meaningful way to really bring about change. And I'm sure we'll get to talking about how I ended up specifically with you, but that's a little of my backstory.
Yeah, no, I'm so grateful that all of that did bring you here. And we will talk about kind of the intersection with uplifting. And then also, I also want to get to how the thinking has evolved as to kind of the opportunities to give back and the spectrum of opportunities to give back that I think we consider now versus how sort of your career had kind of this day focus. And then probably your outside of work activities took you to some form of giving back, whether that's philanthropic or volunteerism. And then now you have this combined role really that has that work and that give back sort of all merged into one. And I know that has a lot of synergy or similarity or relationship to how we think about investment. And so all of those are threads that I we'll pull on. But Linda McGarra Horner, you are not going to get to pass this little thing quiet. And so Linda came along late last year, joined Linda and I, and has quickly become such an integral part of how we do things, what we do, of the energy with which we do things. And so I feel so, so grateful to be in partnership with you, Linda McGarra Horner. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about kind of what's brought you here, where you've been, and why I feel like you could have done anything in the world, why it is that you chose to spend your time and talents here.
Toussaint, you're very, very kind for saying that. But boy, am I glad that both of you are here. As I was reflecting on doing this podcast, also today is my son's 10th birthday, so as a working mom, it's always really fun to, you know, he came in and he said, "It's my birthday." And I said, "It's my birthday." But it's just so, it's been such a journey to be a working mom. And so I will start from the beginning for my story. Originally from Uganda, born and raised. I was born in a rural part of Uganda, but grew up in Kampala in the city. And I grew up in a family. I always say I grew up in a lower middle class family. And that's really just means that I saw a lot of families that lived off of a dollar a day. And I felt like we were so blessed compared to them. But then there was a lot of other families that, you know, were much wealthier than us. And to watch, my father was in the military, so he was always gone, actually at war, literally. So we never knew whether, you know, we wouldn't hear from him for days. And I had a mother that just kind of held down the fort. But there was a lot of like financial uncertainty. And yet there was also just a lot of hope and resilience and grit that made me who I am. And allowed me to dream, even though I didn't see the things that I wanted to be around me. All of that, I will skip to when I came to the US. So one of the biggest kind of instrumental things that have happened, that has happened to me in my life, is literally the day that I got to get on the plane for the first time. I actually know the exact date, August 4th, 2008, the exact flight number, flight 724 Emirates. From Kampala to Los Angeles, 40-hour flight, the very first time I'm on a plane, to come to the U.S. for a better life, for the American dream. And it has been exactly that and so much more. Just education has been something that has transformed my life, transformed my family, transformed the community that I grew up in. But coming to U.S., I studied business administration with accounting in undergrad and went to work at Deloitte & Touche in external audit for about 4.5 years, serving different clients across consumer, healthcare, industrials, life sciences, et cetera. And then coming out of audit, I really wanted to set kind of, you know, audit is interesting because you're always kind of looking at how things have been recorded. Is it accurate? Is it complete? But you're always looking kind of in the past. I got fascinated with the idea of being forward looking and thinking about how organizations operate in the face of uncertainty. And it kind of pushed me towards more finance. And after that, my career has been a mix of finance and strategy, specifically healthcare strategy. So I was at Aetna, where I came up with a strategy for how Aetna contracted with healthcare providers, over 150 healthcare providers. I also worked in a medical device, medical technology company, Medtronic, where I was doing product strategy for a deep brain implantable device, and in looking at how to grow that product, whether it was using the same technology for new indications or growing the types of technologies we're using to treat movement disorders. And that included, you know, doing M&A and looking at early stage startups and scientific ventures that we could pull into our product roadmap. And then most recently, as at SCAN, SCAN is a Medicare Advantage plan, one of the largest nonprofit Medicare Advantage plans. It serves over 290,000 seniors. And I was director of corporate strategy there, doing enterprise strategies with the C-suite executives, but also working on new products and new ways to think about how to address the most pressing issues that seniors face beyond healthcare. So whether that's loneliness, whether that's food insecurity, whether that's transportation, there's just so much surrounding healthcare that determines how somebody is going to how somebody's overall well-being is going to be. And those things are actually much more significant in aging. And so that was a really cool experience to do that. Around that time, I was thinking about, you know, having had all these experiences, being proximate to the C-suite, I wanted to, you know, I really wanted to think, I was thinking about what did I want to do with my career? And I really wanted to do something where I was, you know, I either was like building something, I wanted to do something impactful. Linda, what you said really resonates with me, or Toussaint, what actually you touched on really resonates in terms of, I've been doing nonprofit things and those things felt good outside of my day job. You know, whether it was doing taxes for low income communities so they could get income tax credits, or, you know, volunteering for Cancer Society or an education nonprofits in Uganda. But desired a job where I would feel that every day in my job. And yes, I had, you know, jobs obviously that had that impact. But when I came across the two of you and understood sort of the opportunity work at Uplifting, it had so many things that I appreciated, which we will get into, I'm sure. But yeah, that's the reason I'm here. Number one, because of the two of you. I don't think I would be here otherwise. but also because like this role that I'm in, gosh, for the first time in my life, I feel like, yes, there's nothing missing from what I want from my day job. So, yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, Linda, every time I hear a story, and I've had the pleasure of hearing it, but I learned something new each time you recount it. And I think, you know, my sister and I were both first generation college goers. I told you a little bit about my dad and my upbringing. I never felt like I wanted for anything, for sure. I don't, you know, I was loved, cared for, and felt secure. I know now, looking back and reflecting, that other people had more. That was fine. But I hear your story, and I just think how inspiring. My life has been so easy to get to the point of here. And so I just think one of the things that's been just enlightening to me and just really energizing as I've now immersed myself in this, I call it the impact ecosystem, if you will, is just the stories. It's the stories of the talent and the people that are here and how they've gotten here and why they're doing what they're doing. And I also think generationally, you know, my generation, I'm really still of the generation where you put your head down, you worked, and then you strive to get to a point. Like you could volunteer a bit, you could write some checks philanthropically, but your ability to really engage and have this blend of your day job and your purpose, it's not how we thought. You put your head down, and then if you got to a point where you could retire, then you could do it. And so one of the things I know that's motivated our entire Uplifting story and the opportunity set is the fact that people are starting earlier, whether it's in their careers, whether it's with their dollars on how they want to invest them for the long term, but really in this beautiful fusion of purpose and investment, purpose and how I'm spending my time daily, since we spend so much time in what we do. So I just love it. And I just have to tell you, Linda, every time I hear your story, I think, oh, this is why I'm here. I'm here to work with people like you. I'm here to inspire the next generation of you and to do whatever we can to bring that next crew to where we're at. So anyway, thank you.
Linda, Asante, along those lines, like, because I think there's an analogy, or it's analogous to kind of what happens with our investments, right? This idea of combining these two things and not sacrificing purpose for career success or career success for purpose. We talk a lot about that same sort of balance when we're talking about investments. And you are like an investor. when I think of you, like we are in impact investments, but you are the investments part of impact investments, to be sure. Like, what gave you confidence, belief, hope as an investor that this purpose and this impact could be done in a way that also sort of not only doesn't sacrifice financial goals, but supports financial goals? What's kind of some of the opportunity set that you put in your investor hat on, said like, oh, wow, like there's something here?
Yeah. So, you know, listen, I think we've all had different aha moments along our journeys, and certainly none more great than in 2020, and what led you to form Uplifting ultimately, which I know folks that are listening to this are very familiar with your story. But I think, you know, impact investing and this idea we call the double bottom line, we call it social impacting, doing good and doing well. We call it all, it's had all different labels. It's been around for a little while. I mean, when I think about it from as an investment opportunity set, we're kind of at impact 3.0. And, you know, there's been a lot of learnings along the way. But what it means is, you know, even as we think about our own data set, right, and our own, you know, we've got over 1,200 managers in a database. I mean, that would have been unheard of 10 years ago. It's not that impact investing didn't start back then and early, but really this sort of blending and understanding, and this understanding that it didn't have to be concessionary, that there's a room for concessionary catalytic dollars, there's a room for philanthropic dollars, but there's also a lot of opportunity that just presents itself because by definition, these are under-resourced opportunities. Why are they that way? It's often because the managers are just overlooked. You know, they look like us on this phone, but they're not. They're folks that have been working careers. They've had tremendous amounts of experience, but they may not have had the opportunity to be out on their own, to build their own track record, to kind of be recognized in that way. It just, the systems and the structure and the supports weren't necessarily there. And so, you know, I look at it now and I say, managers have been overlooked at company levels. The founders have just been underestimated. And the opportunity set, you know, the consumer has been underserved. I mean, for a long time, we've had people putting products on shelves, developing healthcare services, putting our housing needs in place that didn't necessarily represent the communities that were actually the end buyers of those products or end users of those services. And so to me, as we look at this now, you know, it's just our portfolios are woefully underrepresented for what our broader community looks like. And so when I look at that, I say it's not risk. People look at it as though we're taking incremental risk. I actually think it's risk in your portfolio when you're not representing the broader populace, when you don't have that diverse group of people around the table. And studies have certainly shown this, that don't have that diverse group of people around the table that are driving for optimal solutions for different categories, for different consumers. And so I think, you know, it all starts with inclusion. And then from there, we go and we start talking about things on the investment side, which is, as I referenced a little bit earlier, I mean, we are in an increasingly friendly in many ways. I know people might take issue with this, but many of the things we invest with, an increasingly friendly regulatory environment. Why do I say that? Well, talk about sustainable infrastructure, talk about the IRA. There are incentives available both for residential, for commercial, you know, scalable opportunities that people can avail themselves on if they know how to navigate the system to take advantage of those incentive structures to help level set so that we can make this transition in energy over time. And it is going to be something over time. Similarly, you know, we look at affordable housing. I mean, we're seeing legislation locally up through the federal level that is supporting this idea that we need to house the essential workers in our communities in affordable ways. And housing is such a basic element that if you are housing insecure, it causes all sorts of other problems and challenges, right? Healthcare is tied into that. Education is tied into that. Financial inclusion is tied into that. And so you look at these things and it's not incremental risk to invest in them. It's investing around innovation to help solve some of these, you know, profound problems that we face as a society. And so I'm incredibly excited about the investment opportunities and the investment returns are available. And I feel perfectly good about delivering really good, attractive, compelling risk-adjusted returns to our clients, while at the same time allowing them to invest in a values-aligned way that meets them where they're at, and they can really feel like they're having profound impact early and often throughout their investing career or investing life cycle.
Mic drop. Shut down the podcast. No, I love the thought. We've talked about this a bunch as a team about this thread between impact investing and innovation investing and that opportunity. Lena Magara-Horner, can you talk a little bit about the importance of lived experience and sort of going into some of these impact investments? And I know you have your own kind of lens and lived experience, both not only as an immigrant, but as someone who has now been close to healthcare and inside healthcare organizations and has seen some of this intersectionality as it relates to seniors. Can you just talk about kind of seeing these opportunities and the ability to see these opportunities both through lived experience in terms of identity and also experience in terms of different backgrounds and seeing how some of these things intersect?
Yeah, thank you for that question. And, you know, to Linda's point, you know, when we are doing diligence, we hear fund manager stories and why they're the right person to invest in whatever their investment thesis is, right? And a lot of times, you know, what you see in terms of overlooked and estimate, you're seeing kind of an underappreciated fund manager recognizing overlooked opportunity. I'm probably mixing up the words, but it takes somebody who has been near a low income community where they've seen the challenges that, for example, right, not having childcare could prevent a single mother from going to the doctor and the influence that has on healthcare. Sometimes you just need to have been that person that went to a low income school to understand what it means to sort of like how the education experience that low-income communities are facing, and see the opportunity though from a business perspective. I also kind of just think about women. The President Biden just signed the Women's Research Funding Act, and we are in 2024. It's probably like over the last 5-ish years that we've now been talking about menopause and, reproductive health and maternal health in Black communities. And these are all, revenue generating opportunities, but it required there to be more women fund managers, more women investors to recognize that this is actually an opportunity to fill an actual gap, right? And so I think that, there's so much with lived experience. I can't possibly, know everything about every investment that comes across, but I'm always kind of thinking about how whoever is in front of us, how their experience plays into the opportunity that they see and what the world isn't seeing, right? That's what we talk about in terms of inclusion alpha. And so I suppose that's an articulate way to talk about lived experience, but I think it's just this nuanced thing of like, do you have enough information to basically capitalize on the investment opportunity, right? So I think we talk about the fact that when there's information asymmetries, right, you can find opportunities in investment, and I think that totally applies for lived experiences where, I can think of all of our fund managers and their experiences and how they came to want to start a fund. A lot of times it's kind of a thread you can pull on that it makes them the best people to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think about all the experience and background and life that is built into their lens, and it clearly becomes an investment edge in a lot of cases. And many of our managers are able to articulate that very clearly about how that edge has come to be. And so that's fascinating. You guys are here, and I think I have been conscious about making sure that we bring on the very best talent that we possibly can at every stage in our organization. That just so happens to be all women leading this company. I don't think that's by accident, but truly, it has been talent first, person first, and I think it's an undersourced, to our point about Inclusion Alpha, it's just an undersourced of pool of really remarkable people. Can you guys talk a little bit about, and maybe we'll start with you, Alinda Asante, some of the remarkable women in your lives that have inspired you personally, professionally, et cetera.
So as I reflect on this, I want to be clear, like some of my biggest early advocates have been men, and they're extraordinary, whether it's been my father, as I mentioned earlier, whether it's been some individuals early in my career at JP Morgan that really just were my advocates, but also just taught me how to make it in a professional environment, right? And in arguably a very male-dominated environment. So I think sometimes it's easy to swing so far in the pendulum and focus on, like in my case, what are women that have influenced me? But I feel compelled, like I have some of my greatest allies, and not the least of which is my husband, who is the single best decision I've ever made in my life. And I could not have done a fraction of what I've been able to accomplish in my professional career without his love and support. So I do want to make sure I give the shout out there. As I'm reflecting on in terms of women, though, one woman in particular, I just saw you recently had a chance to meet her, Debbie Harbin. And Debbie and I came into, got connected back in the middle of the financial crisis. I had just joined Just for Rich. She was trying to launch Artemis Real Estate Partners, which was going to be a women-owned, a business focused on supporting women and minority-owned real estate operating partners. And doing it, she did it in partnership with Penny Prisker, and doing it at a time when, the world was crumbling around them. And she was, we got connected through a partner of mine, and just hit it off. I mean, she's She's one of the most generous souls that I know, but also one of the sharpest business minds that there is. And Deb, from the start, always said to me, talent's equally distributed, but opportunity is not. And she's just tenacious in her pursuit of saying, here's the business case. And I feel good doing about it because this is just right and what we should do. But making the case against all odds and just sort of be relentless about it. And so I was inspired by that from, you know, the first moment I met her and saw what her vision was. But honestly, over time, I mean, she's just become such a close personal friend because she's an honest critic. She lifts me up when I need to be lifted up. She pushes me outside my comfort zone. She showed me kind of that power of possibility. And, you know, she's a doer. So she really uses her network to connect people. And I found that the power of that just in my relatively short tenure immersed in this impact ecosystem, I feel like it's that connective tissue that binds us together. That's really the power, and that's going to drive change over time and all these fantastic investment opportunities and changing the world that we can do, because the people doing it, and this is absolutely Debbie, they do things. They don't just sit back and say, I've reached the station in my life, let me dole out some advice. They're actually doing it. They pick up the phone, they make the call, they write the letter, they push you to do X, they get on the podcast, right? They ask for the philanthropic dollar when that's needed. They make the business case. And so she never rests on her laurels. And so I'd say in terms of a woman that's really had tremendous impact on me personally and professionally, I am far better in both those aspects of a person because of her. I always know she's in my corner, and sometimes she's pulling me forward. Sometimes she's nudging me from behind and pushing me, but always she's encouraging, supporting, and believing me. And so that's the person, that's the one woman I really want to give a shout out to.
She was definitely a powerhouse in my brief interaction with her, and it doesn't surprise me to hear her name come up with you. What about you, Linda Bagara Horner?
So, you know, when I was reflecting on this, I was like, Linda, don't do that. That's so cliche. But it has to be my mother. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it is my mother, hands down. I can't think of a woman who has had more impact on my life than my mom. You know, the things that I've learned from her, resilience, right? Just day in, there was probably like 10 of us at any one given time in our house, and just seeing her go to schools and beg for tuition to be paid late, go to grocers and ask for us to get groceries on credit, you know, just, but keep pushing us to say, you're going to get a good education and you're going to have a better life and we're all going to be better off. So even that faith and hope, when sometimes it just felt ludicrous, I was when I was reflecting on this, I thought about the moment when I was 16 years old and I was sitting in our living room and I applied to a job at the World Bank. And I was
like,
right? And she was like, yes, you can do it. Like, of course I couldn't do it, right? But she was like, do it. Yes. And I remember when I said, you know, I will go to the US for college, the first time I said that, my siblings laughed. They were like, huh, what? And my mother was always like, yes, you can do it. And when finally I did it, she was like, you know what? All those years I said you could do it, but I didn't actually believe it. Like, so you, you know, I was just saying it just to keep you encouraged, right? So that just the picture of hope and also just entrepreneurial spirit. And I think that's where I get that from. You know, we had to kind of find creative ways to make money. And so to your point about innovation, as now I'm going to circle back a little bit to lived experience, is I lived in a neighborhood where we didn't have running water in my home. And we had to go to a well where you basically carried like buckets of water, and then you had to carry it a long ways to bring it back home. And you had to like just had enough water to use, and then you had to do that over and over again. And my mom came up with this idea for us to like go to the water department and get water at our house. And then we sold water to our neighbors so that they didn't have to go a long distance, right, to get water. But you know, when I was thinking about that, I thought back to lived experience and your question. Like, one thing I didn't touch on is, yes, my own lived experience. And I think about like financial inclusion, and we talk about, you know, people getting proper like financing, right? So that they're not having to go to predatory lending. I know what it's like to get a payday loan because I've been there where like there was nothing I could do except get a payday loan to make it through that week, right? And I think that there's something powerful with that when you hear pitches or whatever, that you can see yourself as a part of that customer base. So you can really truly feel the innovation and the impact on that person down, you know, downstream from the capital and what it's going to do for them in a meaningful way, right? So sorry to circle back to the lived experience, but I, you know, answering this question and sort of my mom teaching me to be entrepreneurial kind of made me think about that too. Yeah.
This is why we want a firm of Linda McGarr Horners. She just keeps raising the bar for us. So, my heart is just so warmed when I hear your lived experience and you're in a better investor for it, frankly. I mean, the questions you ask and the insights you have, you know, do we often talk about, you know, it just perspective on investments and the like. And I think your lived experience comes through and even like your healthcare experience more recently and strategy and really understanding that customer base and the importance of those relationships. These are all things that it goes to this idea that we just have to, sometimes it's not as pre-baked as, you know, maybe traditional fund managers are in terms of how you can diligence them. So we just have to open the aperture a little bit. We just have to be a little bit more expansive in how we do that. But this whole concept of lived experience and really understanding what it means to be on the other end of whatever that service or that consumer product is, that technology, that's what brings these things to life. And that's where I think we're actually really comfortable underwriting the risk with the managers with whom we're investing in. So no, super excited. And just, if I haven't told you lately, I just love having you on the team. I just, your life has gotten so immeasurably better since you've joined us. So I feel like I just think of you, Tucson and I regularly, you're like our partner. Like you are our partner in this and we're going to go do great things together. We already are. I can't wait to see what the future holds. So
thank you. I'm in all the feels. I'm like, okay. So at some point we have to wrap this. I told you guys,
we've been
talking forever. So I think I like to wrap with, normally I ask what is uplifting to you. And as much as I would love to hear that, I would also before that love to hear like what is giving you guys hope about the work that we do right now? So maybe we'll start with Linda Asante, like what gives you hope that we can make some progress and there's a case to be made for what we do?
Yeah. So honestly, what gives me hope is you and Linda. I mean, and Denise and our team and all of our partners that we've already met and the ones still to come, right? Because I'm just inspired by the energy, the care, the commitment that each of those players are on this journey with us bring every single day. They bring their A game because it's more than just getting a paycheck. It's more than just making a profit. It's having real impact, whether that's, as you like to talk about, these micro impacts that one can have on a daily basis to, you know, trying to move the needle on some of these more profound global issues that we have. But so I'm hopeful because I'm inspired by the people that are applying their talents and their treasure and their time to these endeavors. And so, and I see greatness every day. And so I've always had this philosophy. I never want to be the smartest person in the room. We're in trouble if I'm the smartest person in the room. Like I always want to have people that are smarter than me that I just have tremendous respect for. And I feel like every day I get on every call and that's the world in which I'm living now. And it's the beauty and the diversity of that group. Like what my Zoom screen looks like today versus what it's looked like for most of my 35 years, completely different. And that there's just an energy there and knowledge base and that I underappreciated, right? Even though I believe I appreciated the possibility, I'm now seeing it, living it firsthand. So, you know, I came here because I believed in you, Tucson, and I believed in your story. And as some people that are listening to this may know, I started as an investor one of the early investors in Uplifting Capital, and then ultimately chaired the investment committee and helped set up some of the institutional practices that we have alongside of you and the early team. And now just delighted to like be living the experience every day, day in and out in an operating role. But I stay because I really truly feel respected and valued, and because of this energy and just commitment and care that I see coming from all the stakeholders, but right at the top of that list, the two of you and Denise. So that's my why.
Oh my goodness. Linda Magara Horner. Oh, with that answer.
Oh, I'm gonna say that it's really hard for Linda not to be the smartest person in the room. Like how is that possible? And impossible, right? But for me, but for me again, what gives me hope is yes, I came to this opportunity because of the two of you, and I saw it as just selfishly, honestly, as an opportunity for me to learn from two people who were the best at what they do in their fields. And every day I'm encouraged because of that, just like Linda said. But I also think that there's the market trends to me are clear, right? I spend time thinking about that. And it's more capital. Individuals have a lot of capital, you know, hold 50% of the world's wealth. More of their capital is being allocated to private markets. Day in and day out, we're hearing more and more of wealth advisors, you know, trying to find solutions for investors wanting to put their money towards things that are impactful and values aligned. And you know, all of the sort of research and studies and surveys, it shows that this is happening. And it's not a surprise, right? Because I think pandemic has made everybody want to, you know, try to find meaning and want to align their life towards something that is greater than just, you know, what we've been doing so far. And so that is very encouraging to me, just to know that we're filling a real need in the market, and we're doing it in a way that is uplifting for them, but it's also uplifting for us who are doing it, right? So we talk about it being emotionally resonant, and every day it's emotionally resonant for me. So that is my hope.
Oh, well, you two give me hope. You guys are so uplifting, and I think I just said it, but I'll say it again. I'm so grateful to be in partnership with the two of you and building something special with you. And so thank you for stepping outside of your comfort zones a little bit with me. I think people will be blown away by you, as I have always been. And so much appreciated.
As always, nothing on this show is intended to be investment advice. The views expressed are those of the host or its guests, not of Uplifting Capital Inc. or any of its subsidiaries. If you've enjoyed what you've heard or gotten any value out of it, please be sure to leave a review or comment, subscribe, like, or click the notification button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening.